Thanks for tuning into the Bulwark Podcast. Today is Wednesday, July 31st, last day of the month, and we have in studio with us Senior Editor Ben Parker.
Welcome to the podcast, everyone.
And joining us remotely is a very special guest, our good friend, Michael Graham. Michael Graham is the politics editor at the New Hampshire Journal and at Inside Sources. He's a CBS contributor and a columnist at the Boston Herald. But I know Michael because he was the very first host of the Weekly Standard podcast almost 7 years ago, I think. Isn't that right, Michael?
Look what you've done to it. You've ruined it. This is terrible. Jeez Louise, what's going on? By the way, I just want you to know when you track me down to my parole officer and ask about doing the podcast, I had to dust off my old Skype because I haven't used it in a while. And I was not aware that in this world of interneting that the spam business, which is on my, you know, I get phone calls all day, every day about, you know, insurance, blah, 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 has reached Skype. Do you get spam Skype?
Yes.
Have you gotten this?
Yeah, I get those but more on Instagram.
See, I have this litany of people who've apparently tried to reach me since the last time I used Skype, and they're all interestingly female, and they have exotic contact information. I think the most interesting name is Rita Bangery. And so I just want you to know, if you're out there, Rita, and you're listening, I'm dedicating today's Bulwark podcast to you, Rita. This is for you, Rita Bangery.
She must have been a big Daily Standard listener and just really missed hearing you on the air.
I think that's what happened. She tracked me down. I think you're right.
This would be a really good time to do a read for a certain VPN company, but they're not a sponsor. So there you go. No free ads.
No, today's sponsor is 8sleep, and we'll hear a little bit more from them about halfway through.
Excellent.
It would have been a great VPN ad. Before you click that link, definitely get on the VPN and turn up your McAfee settings to 11. Well, Michael,
she seems like a nice person. She does.
Yeah,
like,
they all seem so nice. But then
you know who doesn't seem nice? Elizabeth Warren doesn't seem nice.
Yes.
And just so everyone knows, I am in the outskirts of Boston as we speak. That's where I work from. And so she is my U.S. senator. And the ongoing debate over Senator Warren here in Massachusetts is it fair to hold her to the standard of likability? And is it, is she truly not likable, or is that a gender normative, mansplaining form of oppression? And I always find that when I bring up the topic, that I can tell immediately that everyone agrees that she is in fact not very likable, because they then wanted to debate whether or not there is such a thing as likability and can it really be measured and blah, 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 which is of course just another way of saying, boy, people really don't like you, do they?
Yeah. No, I mean, there is a little bit of kind of the gratingness of Hillary there.
I thought it was on full display last night. I mean, I'm taken aback by this notion that she had a big night. Not that she didn't. I don't know what you say win the debate. I don't know that these debates are about that kind of head to head competition. You're really kind of dancing for your team. You're trying to raise money and name ID or energize your group and maybe pull some people who are already in your lane to pick you as their candidate. But I kept looking at the debate last night, trying to think, as a guy who grew up in rural South Carolina, who has a lot of lifelong Democrats who switched over to vote Trump in 2016 in my family, what would they see if they tuned in? Now, Ben, this is the point you're supposed to chime up and go, why the hell would they be tuned in? Normal people are not going to watch this debate.
We were talking about this. Did you watch the whole debate?
Well, see, I had to write about it for Inside Sources, and I have to talk about it on CBS. So I'm one of those
people. And the Bulwark Podcast.
Obviously. And the Bulwark Podcast. I'm one of those people chained to a sofa, with a woman with a lash and a rubber mask screaming, look at the screen! Look at the screen! I mean, so I had to do the whole thing. And so here are my three things I think a normal person, if there are any, and I'm not, I confess, yeah, as
none of us know.
Exactly. I'm not a normal person, but I admire them tremendously. The three things are, why is Bernie yelling? Boy, Liz Warren seems to be really mad. And why can't the bald guy win? And I think that's how normal people saw the debate last night. And I just wonder how deep can Liz Warren dig this hole of always being cranky and scolding and indignant? That just seems like not a winning flavor.
It's the perfect combination of Hillary Clinton and Bernie Sanders.
Exactly. Yeah. It really is.
And she kind of yells too.
Oh, she definitely yells. No, she definitely yells in that.
So you think John Delaney did really well last night?
Well, I mean, once again, what are you trying to do? I mean,
get people to know who he is.
Exactly. My lovely bride, Buttercup, it does not follow politics at all. She leaves it to me entirely. She's very much a kind of average, common sensey, you know, kind of person. And she was watching some of the clips with me this morning, the recaps, whatever. And she looked up and literally said, "Why can't the bald guy win?" I mean, she's like, "He seems to make sense." I mean, he seems like you can't just, you know, have craziness. You have to have some way to pay for it. And you know, and she to her, it's an indicator of the current health or lack thereof of the Democratic Party. One of the debates I had last night with a Democratic political consultant in my Twitter feed, as we're watching, he's a nice guy, we're just going to go back and forth. He thought it was a good night for Democrats to have Delaney and Hickenlooper and Governor Bullock pushing the more moderate vision, because he thinks it kind of, you know, makes a bigger buffet for would-be voters to choose from. They can say, "Oh, I feel welcome there." I took away the opposite thing, the dismissive attitude of the audience, of the front runners, of the media to these people is a reminder. Hey, if you think like them, these kind of not as far left Democrats, there's no room for you here. Go away. We don't want you. We're just going to mock you. If you were at all centrist and then you flipped on Stephen Colbert, who was live last night to be after the debate, and all he did was just beat down Delaney, you got the message. Okay, moderate Democrat, not welcome. Bye. I got to go somewhere else. And you know, I don't know if that somewhere else is Donald Trump, because he does so much to alienate moderate Democrats too. But I think that was the takeaway, more than, look, there are more choices here. This part, the tent's bigger than you think.
Well, you know, as long as it was last night, the thing is really only half over, because there's another debate tonight. And what I was watching, I was thinking, you know, these Hickenlooper, Delaney, the other sort of more moderate or pragmatic voices, are they carving out a larger lane for Biden, right? Biden so far was pretty much the only one in this sort of more pragmatic, more centrist lane. But if he can now differentiate himself from Delaney and say, "Oh, of course, you know, I'm a more authentic progressive than John Delaney, so you can feel comfortable with me as a more progressive choice." He's not the one out on the rightward wing of the Democratic field anymore, and that might help him. Let's see, you know, we'll have to see tonight if he takes up that opportunity.
I really like John Delaney personally. We had him on our podcast, and I think I've got a pretty good, I mean, anyone who wants to run for president is crazy. I mean, look at Marianne Williamson. So acknowledging that John Delaney is, by my definition, crazy because he wants to be president. I've worked around a bunch of Congress critters, and we had him on our podcast, and he was a very smart, nice guy, as down to earth as you could want or hope someone worth. And I loved Elizabeth Warren, you know, like, "Yes, excellent," rubbing her hands together. "Ooh, he dared make $60 million as a successful businessman. Yes, we're going to tax him." He lived rent-free inside of her brain, and she came across as unhinged any time that he said, "Yeah, what you're proposing is unrealistic. It's not going to happen." He was living rent-free, and I was interesting to see among the people I follow on Twitter, on the left side of the sphere, they were all team Elizabeth Warren and John Delaney's awful. And I'm like, no, right. John Delaney's, like, by comparison, great. But I realized, we're not the audience, really.
Exactly. I mean, here's Delaney's dilemma, and I've interviewed him several times. He's the most popular Democrat among Republicans.
Yes.
And there's just no room for that guy in this environment. In 1992, you could have done something with that.
Guess they
maybe
don't want my vote, you know.
Exactly. No, it's absolutely not. And so there's no room for him there. But you just mentioned how Senator Warren's problems with Delaney. I think you can summarize her entire performance in a single tweet. "Don't at me." That was her whole message. "Hey, I'm going to give everybody free college for forever." Well, how are you going to do that? "Don't at me. I'm going to give Medicare for all. But somehow magically that doesn't involve taking away your health care you have now. Don't at me." And she was it's the unwillingness to answer basic questions. And Bernie actually got in the don't at me action as well when Jake Tapper simply asked him, you know, would you be, you know, ending private insurance? That's a Republican talking point. Don't at me.
No, it's not.
A common sense question. Well, first of all, it doesn't matter if it is a Republican talking point. It's a normal person's question.
Even Britain has private health insurance.
And I think that Sanders and Warren revealed in a small way, not that their audience can see it, that they are completely unprepared to actually debate their plans. They think that if you yell louder and call everyone else Trump, that you can just get away with it, which if you think about it, is kind of the Trump approach to debates too.
Yeah. And this level of dishonesty that they're working with, you know, where Warren 3 or 4 times in a row refuses to say if her plan would raise taxes on the middle class, she just refuses to answer the question. It's operating on a, you know, even if you want to get even more cynical about it, the only reason they can get away with this dishonesty is because they're running for president and presidents don't write the laws, right? So they might have this wonderful 100-page plan for how to give everyone in America free health care forever for free, you know. But it doesn't matter because, you know, just ask anyone from the Obama administration. No plan like that is going to survive first contact with Congress. So why should they answer detailed questions about it when it doesn't matter anyway? It really doesn't.
Yeah. You, in a sense, it does, you're right. But in another sense, one of the numbers, and you know these numbers are all, you know, spun because who knows what these things would cost. But one of the numbers that came out this morning is a combined spending total of $200 trillion. And there's a point where you're just proposing so much insane crap that it's impossible for anyone who's serious-minded to take you seriously at all. And you've at some point, I think, to cross a threshold, particularly with the kinds of voters who are still persuadable, all 7 of them, you're going to have to show that you've at least done a hypocritical token attempt at math,
yeah,
as opposed to just simply saying, yeah, we're just going to spend it. I mean, that's why I had never heard of, you guys are smarter than me, so you probably already had, but I had never heard of modern monetary MMT theory,
yeah,
until AOC brought it up. And I started reading about it and I wrote some pieces for Inside Source about it. And I have to confess, the first person I was talked to about it, I literally thought he was punking me.
Yeah. It's Keynesianism, okay, on meth.
It's not. I mean, it's,
I keep
for
on
people
to
don't know
it
the
to
premise,
my bank, but you know they won't. Yeah, they won't take exactly me up on it.
For people who don't know the premise of MMT, I'm not making this up. If you want a $3 trillion a year healthcare plan, you simply print $3 trillion.
Yeah, it's mint the
and
coin.
Give everyone their money.
It's mint,
and then
the
they
coin
just go out and get their healthcare plan. And then if shockingly that money's suddenly worth a lot less because you're printing trillions of dollars, then you raise taxes to pull the money back out of the tax out of the pools. In other words, it's a combination of higher taxes and inflation. What could possibly go wrong? I didn't believe when I first heard about it.
No, it's nuts. And this stuff wouldn't be catching such fire, I think, on the left, if the Republican Party had not totally abandoned the mantle of fiscal conservatism. Deficits don't matter. Trump just going crazy, not right talking about. I'm not saying. I mean, I'm a firm believer in reforming entitlements. It's right, a ticking time bomb, and you can't MMT your way out of that, and you can't MMT your way into free health.
Yes, I can. Don't at me.
Yeah,
MMT for everyone. Don't at me.
Oh, geez, so it's going to work out great for my mortgage. But you know, if Republican, I mean, when somebody wins, and I assume it is not going to be a John Delaney or, I mean, Amy Klobuchar had a horrible night. I mean, she's dead.
Yeah.
We're going, you know, it's a question of what flavor of like far left progressivism is going to win the whole thing, except for maybe Joe Biden. When whoever wins is fighting Trump, and because you can't put these primary campaign promises back in the bottle, you can't jump to the right far left and be like, well, you know, now that I'm a general election candidate, you know, that stuff in the primary was just what I said to win right the primary.
You mean it's not necessary? Okay,
yeah. And I
so
think
let me,
that
so
that's,
let me wait, let me interrupt you right there. What makes you think you can't? In other words, there was a time when you could have, because
maybe
it was standard procedure. What do you think is different?
Well, I mean, and I think you opened up your newsletter this morning with a quote from Mayor Pete, who did not also admittedly have a great night, because he needed to have a great night as a top-tier candidate. He said, and you, as you quote in the newsletter, if we embrace a far-left agenda, they're going to say we're a bunch of crazy socialists. If we embrace a conservative agenda, which... they're going to say we're a bunch of crazy socialists. So let's stand up for the right policy, go up there and defend it. I think he's not wrong about that's the Trump campaign sure. line of attack. You know, they the Democratic nominee could be Bill Weld, and they'd be like, he's a socialist. You know, it could literally be like any former Republican.
Justin Amash is a socialist now.
Yeah. Yes, everyone who's not me is a socialist. So I still don't. Is your question that in the era of law, nothing matters, the truth, facts, math, nothing matters, that these people can contort and conform into whatever they want? And
so, yeah, I think two things have happened. One is the abandonment of the feeling that you need to provide evidence. I think, once again, you saw it on stage last night. I'm not going to answer questions about my math.
Or consistency, right?
And then the other side is, the media environment is so different as well that for example, I think it ill served CNN to have Don Lemon asking questions if he was going to ask questions the way that a radio talk show host, of which I used to be, would ask questions. When he said, what do you think of Trump's racist, campaign? Maybe Trump's campaign is racist. That's it's not a crazy notion, but having the moderator ask with that opinion, that partisan opinion built in, just undermines everything. And so you've created a space where people who want to believe that Joe Biden never did endorse, Medicare for All, whatever, they're going to be able to hide out. And so I'm very fearful that there is no consequence anymore for just pulling crap out of your butt. And, just as long as Mexico keeps paying for the wall, I think it's all going
to
be fine.
Yeah. I mean, maybe that still applies to Trump, but I think here's an example of a genie you can't put back in the bottle. Someone like me who's not going to vote for Trump and would have a very hard time voting for a pro-choice candidate, as I've never done in a general election because I'm a staunch Catholic, I kind of got around to thinking like, geez, well, I mean, I could just write in John Kyle like I did last time, or not vote for the office. But could I vote for Joe Biden? And, is he a little nutty? And I got to thinking about like, well, Joe Biden has got a team of people who manage him. And even if he goes nuts in office, would I trust his team more than Trump's? Probably yes. But his flip-flop on the Hyde Amendment, right, where that very, very smart woman at the rope line got him on video to basically get him to change a longstanding view on basically what was like the only semi-pro-life position a Democrat can get away, except for Dan Lipinski, can get away with having in today's Democratic Party, where Planned Parenthood is like the NRA of the left. It's the id, right? You have to do everything they say. I don't think that if Joe Biden somehow wins this primary and he goes and he's trying to like win Never Trump Republicans or disaffected Republicans, he goes, you know what? I got asked a question in a rope line and so. And I've been thinking a lot about the Hyde Amendment. And while I'm pro-choice, I still don't think the government should fund it. And I'm firmly behind it. He would never be able to put that genie back in the bottle. And even if he tried, I mean, I don't think a lot of people would be like, well, I guess I'm never Biden now. They would clearly vote for him over Trump. But I do think on the left, and I don't, maybe this is just there aren't consistent rules. I mean, maybe there never were. But I don't think that on a lot of these big issues, like on abortion or Medicare, that whoever becomes a general election candidate is going to be able to completely tweak this in a way where they change their opinion radically. Kamala Harris has tried to have it, and you see how much that's hurt her.
Do you think that has to do, though, with the sort of the distance that jump from the primary electorate to the general electorate is? Like, do you think that as the parties each are getting further and further and further from each other, that's one reason it becomes harder to make that pivot, because it's a bigger pivot, it's a bigger jump?
It's less about winning persuadables and more about shoring up your base.
Yeah.
So what I've seen, the trend I've seen probably solidified during the impeachment fight over Clinton and then really hardened during the George Bush years, is the transformation of our system into a functioning parliamentary system. That the days of having members of the Senate stand up and say, I don't care what party you're in, Mr. President, the Senate matters. And, this institution matters and the three branches of government matter. Those days are just over. Harry Reid was happy to utterly, gut the rules of the Senate and the Senate's protections, to have not even pass a budget for more than 1,000 days, all in service of the president and his party. And so if you're going to have this system where it's where the president isn't a candidate as much as he or she is the representative of the team. He's the first among the equals. The equals are not going to let you make any major changes. You're not a person who's navigating these multiple forces as one representative of one of the branches of three branches of blah, blah, blah. No, no, no. You are now on this team where you have to wear the jersey and put on the helmet and represent the team regardless of what else is going on. And I think that's terrible. I also think it raises a true problem for smarter people than me, and there's a lot of them, which is I don't know that our system can survive parliamentarianism, because it's not. I mean, if you want to switch and have a parliamentary system, then this can work. But you can't have a system where you're going to have parliamentary politics, but winner take all election not winner take all elections, so that the branches are divided and you've got this team play without the possibility of a consensus.
Yeah, it neuters checks and balances, and it destroys precedents and everything else. And to someone,
if senators are willing to vote bipartisan, you know, cross the line, if House members are willing to cross the line, then it can work. You can have this three branch system, but if everyone's just going to stick with their party no matter what, it's you're trying to fit a square, you know, a British peg into an American hole.
If we're
and never do that, by the way. I got in trouble with that once at a bar in London.
I think I had an ad for that on Skype once.
Yeah. But yeah, that was good. You know, if we're going to go to and that's really, really well put, because I lived through that as a Senate aide, and what Harry Reid did to the Senate before, you know, Mitch McConnell took that even further. If we're going to go to a parliamentary system, at least we have to have questions with the prime minister. We're going to switch here and ask Michael in a second before we get a little word in from our sponsor about New Hampshire, where he works and reports and follows intently. Listen to a word from our sponsor, 8Sleep. Today's podcast is brought to you by 8Sleep, the ultimate sleep machine. When you look at today's world tech leaders and high-growing startup CEOs, I bet you wonder how in the world they have that kind of inexhaustible energy to do what they do. The answer will surprise you. The latest trend with top tech leaders is sleep optimization. While Americans are not getting the same sleep they need, tech founders and CEOs are optimizing their sleep to perform at peak levels every day. The first step, the pod by 8Sleep, the ultimate sleep machine. The pod is the first and only high-tech bed designed to help you achieve peak mind and body performance. Are you looking to sleep deeper? The pod dynamically adjusts the temperature on each side of the bed so you're comfortable all night long. Do you want to know your sleep intel? The pod tracks your biometrics while you sleep with no need for wearable technology, because that's annoying. If you want to sleep better, you can enjoy personalized programs and coaching designed by experts guiding you towards true sleep fitness. Because the better you sleep, the better you everything. You can try the pod for 100 nights, and if you don't love it, 8Sleep will refund your purchase and arrange for a free pickup. And that's only at 8sleep.com/bulwark. They've already sold out of their first two batches, so they are going fast. And for a limited time, our bulwark.com listeners can get $150 off their purchase when you go to 8sleep.com/bulwark. That's EIGHT sleep.com/bulwark. And we're back with Michael Graham, who is the politics editor at New Hampshire Journal and Inside Sources. Michael, how is Donald Trump polling in New Hampshire? Is he going to be able
terribly.
To flip it?
Terribly. He's doing terribly up here. So it's hilarious to watch the twisting and of the Republicans in New Hampshire, who just keep saying over and over again, polls don't matter, polls don't matter. Because the fact is, and I'm open to the idea that, you know, that there's some Bradley effect with Trump polling. In fact, I think you have to expect it when you have the media as, you know, 100% anti-Trump. It's just, you know, some people are just going to wither and hide. But still, when you're down minus 19 in the latest morning consult poll, you're just in big trouble. And that's where Trump is. He's coming. He just announced he's coming up on August 15th for a big rally in Manchester. And the question that everyone has is, what is Governor Chris Sununu going to do? Because Sununu is a popular Republican governor. Here is your astonishing statistic of the day. You ready, Ben? Here we go. There are 31 House and Senate members in the six New England states. There are, of course, six governors. There are more Republican governors out of those six than there are members of Congress out of the 31. There's only one Republican left in all of New England, Senator Susan Collins. That is just astonishing. And it shows the damage that's been done to the Republican brand, starting with George W. Bush and finishing up with Donald Trump. And so you've got this governor who's the third most popular governor in the country. and people wonder how he's going to navigate it. The chairman of the party tweeted out yesterday that they will pay cash money for photos of Governor Sununu with Donald Trump, if anyone can get one. Here's the other interesting story of the week. The most swingy congressional district in the country is the first congressional district in New Hampshire. It switched parties four times in five elections. And the congressman there, newly elected congressman Chris Pappas, the first openly gay congressman from New Hampshire, is known for owning kind of a local restaurant that's kind of the chicken wing where you take your kids after soccer. It's just, he is exactly the kind of Democrat you would put in that district. He's carefully moderate. One of his opponents in the primary was Bernie Sanders' son. And fascinatingly, Bernie would never endorse his own son in the 12-way primary. So that was kind of brutal. But he got through it, never embraced Medicare for All, never embraced Green New Deal, his bipartisanship. He talked about it all the time. And yet last week, out of nowhere, he became the only congressman in a Trump district to call for impeachment. And I've talked to a bunch of Democrats, insiders, longtime people. Nobody understands why. Because in New Hampshire, there is no groundswell for impeachment. New Hampshire is the kind of state where right now Joe Biden could win. Every primary that I've observed up here, the squishier Democrat beats the, you know, strident Democrat. That's just the way it works. Senator Jean Shaheen is not nearly as bipartisan as she claims she is, but she's definitely not a bomb thrower. It's Biden territory. And I think if Biden doesn't knock himself out of the race, which is my prediction that he will, I think he's going to do very well here. But then again, the most Biden member of Congress just jumped on impeachment. Impeachment is underwater by easily 20 points in poll after poll, if not more. In fact, it was hilarious. The day after the congressman announced, "I'm jumping on the impeachment bandwagon," the New York Times had an article bylined from New Hampshire that said, "Why aren't 2020 candidates talking about impeachment? Because the voters aren't asking." And it's a series of quotes from New Hampshire Democrats going, "Ah, don't bother. It's a waste of time. It's too late. We're having an election. It'll never happen." I cannot for the life of me figure out what the hell, why any Democrat in a swing district would jump on impeachment right now. It makes no sense.
Is it because and you know this far better than I, but, you know, I listen to the sort of crazy defenses of, you know, New England Republicans about Trump. It reminds me of being a Cleveland Republican. Oh, we're going to win. We're totally going to win this seat here in Cuyahoga County. Right. And no, you're not. You know, everything's biased against us. The world, it's the media. No, it's, you have shitty candidates. And in the Ohio Democrats have kind of found this now, is took all their best shots, and they've won some races like Sherrod Brown and whatnot. But time after time, they just keep coming up short. And then I just remember a couple years ago, this was, I think, in Maine, Eric Brakey was this like bizarre Senate candidate who somehow won the primary. He was like a Rand Paul guy, incidentally from Cleveland, and just, you know, we're not sent like up in New England. We're not sending our Mike Castles. We're not sending our Scott Browns. We're just sending these. I mean,
we're not sending our best, is what you're trying to say.
We're not sending our best.
But it's not. But and speaking from behind the blue wall, you know, living up here and doing talk radio up here since 2005 and on and on. My message to Republicans around the country is don't save your money. Don't waste your time here. As long as the national party is the way it is, New England is a write-off. Another statistic for you. The last time Massachusetts elected a Republican to a federal office in a general election was 1994. They haven't done it since. Scott Brown had to win a special election. And of course, when it was time for the regular election, you know, 2 years later, he got crushed. It wasn't even a race. I mean, that's just where the country, the region is. And that's why the notion that the state that Trump is going to flip is New Hampshire, I think, is just, I don't get it. I don't see it. The people on the ground will tell you that there are, and they actually are, they're right about one thing. There are a bunch of high school educated white working class residents in New England who have not voted in a while. And they think one reason they haven't voted is that they would kind of tend to vote Republican if they did vote, but they know it's all a waste of time, so they haven't voted in decades. And they think Trump and their emotional connection with Trump can pull them out. And you know, that's possible. After 2016, I stopped making predictions. I totally missed Trump. I was the wrongest person in America. So I don't know. But
stranger things have happened, thinking. You know.
And also, should point this out, the last Republican to carry New Hampshire was W. Not in 2004. He lost then. It was in 2000. So they haven't, you know, no Republicans carried it. Trump was far closer in New Hampshire than McCain or Romney or W. Far closer. And so, you know, it could be that, you know, because the region is so old and so white, that there are, if you could replicate what Obama did in 2012, where you actually got less of the vote from habitual voters, but pulled in millions of new voters, you could change a lot of things. But man, that is really hard and expensive to do.
So what you're saying is, if the Democrats really don't want Trump to pull in those marginal voters in New Hampshire, right, they have to nominate Marion Williamson. That's what I hear you saying.
That's the only way to do it. I completely agree with that. And who else is going to take on the forces of psychic
of dark
darkness?
Energy, yeah.
I don't know who else can do that. Unless it's David Bowie in that movie where he had the rock, the stone. I forget what.
I just want to
Muppets.
I just want to come up with some lyrics to dark psychic forces to the tune of Wild Horses. Dark psychic forces.
I think it was our buddy Garrity over at NRO who said that's going to be the name of his band, is Dark Psychic Forces.
That's a great band. That would be a great band name.
It would be a great band name. My band was always going to be Open Wound, and the name of our first album was going to be With Salt Rubbed In It.
Yeah.
I thought that was... it's kind of a dark garage metal band.
I like playing that game on Twitter where you just take like headlines and just say, you know, I saw, you know, insert quote from headline, open for blank at blank. just because the headline formulation, as you know, is someone who's been an editor and a writer and
right,
a media type for so many years. It's just, it can always be so, so awkward because you're trying to avoid shorthandedness or, you know, appearances of bias or impropriety. So tonight, you know, everyone was asking how everyone's going to pay for their healthcare plan.
Right.
And I quipped, you know, if it lasts longer than 3 hours, you know, please consult your doctor, but also explain how you'll pay for it. Because last night, I admittedly just wanted to tune in for like the last quarter, like an NBA playoff game.
Sure, exactly.
And it just kept going and going and going. And it's probably going to happen again tonight. So let's hear what you guys have to think about tonight with Bernie and Bernie up there.
Not Bernie.
No,
oh, not Bernie. Sorry,
it's Biden and Kamala and some other people that no one cares about.
What do you guys think?
If Kamala Harris doesn't walk over to Joe Biden and smack him, then I'm going to be totally disappointed. I want to see a knife fight. I want this to be a scene out of Kill Bill 2, Volume 2.
It probably will be. I mean, I think that you saw last night that like the CNN moderators, that appeared to be the goal, was maximum carnage.
Yeah. Yeah, and that worked really well in 2016 when they did the debates too.
Who's the executive producer? Is it Quentin Tarantino?
Yeah, exactly. I'm no political strategist, so, you know, my advice is worth what you pay for it. But I'm wondering if too much slapping around Joe Biden might hurt Harris. I'm wondering if she needs to do a little more of what Buttigieg tried to do and present a more substantive...
Above it all.
Yeah, exactly. Sort of, you know, competent, calm, not as scrappy anymore. I mean, she's done it. She's secured her place in the first tier, I think. Mission accomplished. Now it's time to, you know... I think she can be the one, unlike any of the other top-tier candidates, who starts persuading more people to vote for her. Because I didn't see Warren or Sanders or Buttigieg do that last night.
Yeah. Who do you guys think is the Scott Walker of this field?
John Delaney?
Well, no.
No, Walker is the front runner. He could have. He should have been a contender and just blows up.
I thought you meant the one who would drop out to try to save everyone.
Oh, well, that's also too, but I don't see John Delaney doing that to save anyone.
So I guess you could say that Cory Booker might be, because he's someone that people keep telling me has amazing political talent, and he has one of the best consultants in New Hampshire who came out early and backed him, and he's gotten, you know, he's got a good ground game up here, and yet still polls 1 or 2%. And you know, it's, in theory, you could see how Cory Booker could be a great candidate, but man, so far, nothing.
Yeah, no, it's really been lackluster, and the oxygen has just been sucked up by so many other folks. And you know, you saw this. I mean, I remember being at the first Republican debate in Cleveland, and just what a clown show that was. And we still have clown show after clown show on CNN. So yeah, I think that's a good one.
So I have a last question. I have a last question for you guys.
Okay.
Will Joe Biden be the nominee? Yes or no? Ben?
Yeah, probably.
Now I have to take the no.
Swift?
I have to take the no now that Ben's taken the yes. Just to be,
you don't have to know. I have to take whatever you got. I'm just curious.
If you had asked me before the flip flop, not that I think the Hyde Amendment was the thing on which he was going to put the bee in his bonnet and be like, I'm going to win the marginal Never Trump people, who'd be like, well, he's for abortion, but not for public funding of it. But the flip flop on that shows me that Biden, unless he somehow sticks to his guns. Kamala is going to drag him on busing. Kamala is going to drag him on the crime bill, even though she's a cop or was a cop. But if he continues that path of and that's why I think his campaign was smart enough to, you know, take the not the high road, but just you're the front runner. Keep him out of the public eye. Right. Don't let him get on rope lines where trackers and interest groups can catch you and try and, you know, put you in a corner. Because we all know when he was talking about 7-Eleven owners at that, you know, that Senate reception, that guy is just, you know, he's a gaffe machine. Yeah, he's a gaffe machine. He just put in a nickel and pulled the thing, and, you know, it's going to happen. And so they, I think, were smart to try and prevent that. But if they can't put a cork in that, I don't see him as the nominee. But before that flip-flop, I thought hands down, you know, these people were just going to drop like flies, and it would just be five people probably by September.
So two things. I saw Biden at at his first New Hampshire backyard party a few weeks ago, and the number one word to describe what you saw was old. I mean, the guy is just old. Old in the not age, which is a different number. You know, Bernie Sanders has looked like he looks now since he was 16 years old.
Right.
I mean, it's just, you know, Warren 70s, whatever, Trump, whatever.
Was it the bowl of Werther's that gave it away?
some people are old and some people aren't. And Biden is just old. So that's one thing. But the second thing, and this is what I lost sight of and why I got Trump so wrong in 2016. People find a way to do what they want, not what's right, not what makes sense, but what they want. And I have no sense that the broader Democratic electorate wants to nominate a squish, moderate, no health care for all, bald, old white guy. I don't get that sense at all. I get a sense that they really, really want, they want their own Trump. That's what they want. And they know they're not supposed to want it, and they know they're risking the election. But just like they're doing with this impeachment, I think this impeachment thing says a lot. Impeachment could not poll worse. The arguments for it are now gone because we're starting an election. I mean, as Pelosi keeps telling everyone, let's just vote him out. It's a lot easier. Let's just vote him out. They can't let it go. You know what they remind me of? I'm asking about the Swift. They remind me of the Republicans who kept insisting that government shutdowns were brilliant. In 2013 and 2018, they just, in their gut, because they wanted it. They wanted to punch government. People do what they want, no matter how stupid it is, which is the reason why I will be calling Randy Janney here on Skype as soon as we're done, because people do what they want.
You know, in their guts, you know they're nuts. But it reminds me of one of your favorite political philosophers, H.L. Mencken. You know, American people know what they want, and they deserve to get it good and hard. And they're going to. And Michael, thanks so much for taking the time to join us today.
Thank you for letting me see the devastated wasteland that you have turned this once great podcast into.
You're welcome.
My best to Charlie Sykes.
Yes, and thanks to our podcast sponsor, 8Sleep. If you want to follow Michael on Twitter, his handle is at IMMGraham, and you can follow him also at michaelgraham.com. We will be back tomorrow, and we're going to do this all over again. Thanks for listening.